Australia, you're tuned to Truth News Radio on the 22nd of November 2014. So glad you could join us today. Well, folks, I've got a great guest coming on in the second hour today. First time on Truth News Radio, I have Dr. Vera Scheibner. Now, Dr. Scheibner is a really inspiring person. You know, we get a lot of people on the show who have expertise and knowledge, but sometimes, you know, the people who come on really stand out as being dedicated to truth and coming from a very high intellectual perspective as well, that just really stands out. And I really find that with Dr. Scheibner, it really does stand out. She was educated in Eastern Europe. She's a mature lady. She's as she said in her interview, she's 80 now, and she's got a long list of scientific qualifications. But for the last few decades, she has been dedicating her life to study and research and exposing medical fraud in relation to the research and knowledge about vaccines. And she's gathered a huge trove of documents, which she's actually pulled from libraries to substantiate, to provide a basis for, you know, very, very solid knowledge on the topics that she is actually researching. So that's all coming up in the second hour, and it's going to be a very interesting discussion. We're going to look at vaccines, but we're really going to come at this topic from a more holistic perspective, where we're going to try and focus on health and what is the essence of health. What do we need to be healthy? What do we need to do to minimize sickness? Because obviously sickness is not something we want to encourage. We don't want to have a sickly way of life, and we certainly don't want to be dependent on medicines. So Dr. Scheibner is a great advocate of natural health and all the things that you can do to basically keep yourself well without relying on medicines, without relying on the giant industry of the medical healthcare system. Now, in the first hour, I'm going to start off talking a little bit, somewhat along the similar vein of medicines and health, but I'm going to actually talk about the legalization of marijuana, because I think this is something now that really needs to be, we really need to pay attention to what is going on with the quite rapid changes that are happening in the US and also in Australia. And we need to recognize that when legalization and when legal changes occur in the US, you can expect the same types of changes to occur in Australia and indeed probably around the world. And what does this really represent? And this is what I want to get into in today's show. And I want to look at the concept of medicinal marijuana, which is the first kind of thin end of the wedge of legalizing marijuana. And they're talking about the medicinal value of marijuana, which of course people have known for many thousands of years. It's part of our human cultural heritage to know that, but now this is being sort of fed back to us as wonderful scientific information. But I mean, let's just have a look at what is really going on. Let's begin with an ABC News Australia coverage of the story. And this is about a brand of marijuana which is now about to be launched in the United States called Marley Brand. So let's just play to you a recent clip from ABC News.
The reggae legend Bob Marley is set to become the face of a global marijuana brand. The late Jamaican musician's family has joined with the US private equity firm to launch the business called Marley Natural. It's planning to start mass production of the drug in markets where it's legal from next year. Business reporter Pat McGrath.
In the 1970s, Bob Marley brought the sounds of Jamaica into the mainstream, and he also delivered a message about what he saw as the benefits of cannabis, or as Bob Marley called it, the herb.
Herbs are good for everything. Why these people who want to do so much good for everyone, who call themselves governments and this and that, why them say you must not use the herb?
But 33 years after Bob Marley died, governments around the world are increasingly changing their position on marijuana. A wave of legalization in the United States has drawn cannabis production out from underground, and it's quickly becoming big business. Now, some of Bob Marley's family have struck a deal with the US private equity firm Privateer Holdings to start a joint venture.
We embark on a new chapter of his legacy. To realize more fully in the world the many benefits of cannabis for the mind, body, and spirit.
Privateer Holdings is a Seattle-based firm that invests exclusively in marijuana. Zach Hudson is the company's spokesman.
So this is a 30-year licensing deal between Marley Natural and Privateer. You know, we're looking to offer three different product lines to the global marketplace that will begin to be introduced late next year. And those three lines are heirloom Jamaican cannabis strains. So those are varieties that Bob himself would have enjoyed. Topical, so lotions and creams and balms that are infused with cannabis and hemp. And a line of accessories either used to store or consume cannabis.
So you've essentially bought the license to use his image and name to promote these products.
Yeah, I think it's more than just a license. It's really a partnership. It was really important to the family and to us, the Privateer, to do this in a way that honored Bob's life and legacy. And, you know, we really saw an opportunity to help the world understand Bob's relationship with cannabis.
Okay, I'll just leave it there. I'd just like to say there are a few things about this development which I find a little disturbing. First of all, I totally agree with what Bob Marley said there. You know, why should the herb be banned? You know, absolutely. You know, this herb has a lot of great things about it. But we do need to understand that the whole business of people using drugs has been under the control of oligarchies for many hundreds of years. You know, perhaps back in an ancient time when we didn't have this highly centralized society with very, very, very powerful controlling oligarchies, people could pretty much just go out and, you know, pick some marijuana and put it in some food or smoke it or do whatever they want, and that was great. You know, I mean, that's terrific. But the problem with the whole system that we live within now is that everything is controlled from a very top-down, very pyramidal oligarchical control structure, and that creates all kinds of problems. Now, with marijuana, what I've found, I mean, I did smoke it a bit when I was younger, but I actually found that that it started to have a very dangerous effect on me, which I know a lot of people also concur. And what I found actually, though, was that it was more due to the way that the types of marijuana that had become common by, say, the late 1970s, which were the highly artificial methods of growing it, hydroponic methods, which make the plant grow very, very quickly and increase the amount of THC, but also increase the amount of other toxins. And the effect that it has on you is quite different compared to, say, the wild plant or the plant being cultivated in a more natural way. And that's probably a direct result of it being illegal and forcing the marijuana growers to go underground and find all these ways to grow without being detected. But there are other problems that come with legalization, and you know, before we start cheering and thinking, hey, that's, you know, wow, it's, we've reached a golden age, you've got to understand that when the powers that be decide to legitimize a drug, there's a whole other suite of problems for people, for personal freedom and for the quality of life of society to consider. The powers that be have two different main modalities of legitimizing drugs within society. One is to make them medicinal and make them prescription-based, which, of course, is the way they bring psychopharmaceutical drugs to the market. Antidepressants and tranquilizers and all these things are drugs which could be used in a purely recreational sense, but they have been brought to us as medicines that you have to go to the doctor to get. Although I think in some countries you can actually buy them over the counter, it varies. But the main thing to understand here is that the distribution is controlled, and it's also controlled through marketing, through very, very heavy PR campaigns to socially engineer particular types and patterns of usage of drugs. So with the psychological drugs, it is all geared towards being locked into the diagnosis of depression, the treatment of depression, you take your medication. And this actually becomes a form of social control, ladies and gentlemen. This is actually what Aldous Huxley had envisaged in his book, Brave New World, back in 1933, when he wrote that book, is that people could be controlled by the state sanctioning drugs and getting everyone hooked on drugs. And in a way, that actually keeps people quite manageable. Now, of course, another way of doing it is to legalize drugs for recreational purposes and then put massive amount of taxes on those and also heavily restrict and monitor what people do, which is another way of somewhat controlling people. I mean, allowing people to drink alcohol but restricting the supply of it and also having all kinds of penalties for using it when you're not supposed to, for example, driving. Although it looks like it, superficially you could say, well, we've got the freedom to use alcohol, but you could look at it another way and say, well, they provide us this substance and then they do all these kind of controlling things to make money out of it or to threaten us. It's a very interesting subject to actually consider. So when we come back from the break, I will continue on this theme. You're with Truth News Radio Australia. We'll be right back. Men and women of Earth, may I have your attention? This is Harewood Fenton, host of Truth News Radio Australia. You're invited to join the info war as we work to restore truth in media and challenge the dark forces which now dominate mainstream news. I'm calling on you, valued listener, to use your hard-earned dollars to help us smash the globalist empire. Visit truthnews.com.au and subscribe today. Welcome back, you with Truth News Radio. Great to have you aboard today. And may I recommend having a look at our website, truthnews.com.au. We've got shows going back about 6 years now on the site. The first show that we ever launched was in, I think, March 2008. A lot's happened in the world since then, and you know, the show's been a few different changes during that time. In the last couple of years, we've really streamlined it, and of course, we broadcast now on the Logos Network in Austin, Texas. And I've had the opportunity to bring some really great guests on the show, and one of which is going to be in the next hour, a new guest for Truth News Radio, Dr. Vera Scheibner, who will be talking to us about vaccines and natural health, a really must-listen interview. Now, if you like what we do here at Truth News, I would strongly encourage and indeed implore you to become a subscriber, because the show runs on the smell of an oily rag. Now, in about June of this year, I launched a subscription platform for the website, and we've currently got about, I think, 45 subscribers, which is great, and it is growing, but it's growing slowly, and I know that people appreciate this show, and I know that some people have been listening for a few years, and all I would like to say is that if you do like the show and if you do enjoy it, why not become a subscriber? If you don't have too much cash, you can easily join up as what we call a concessional subscriber. That's $35. You won't get the T-shirt, though, if you sign up as a concessional subscriber, but it certainly will help us to send the money, and I really will greatly appreciate it. It's concession or not, you will be greatly, greatly appreciated by me if you do that. You can join up as a full subscriber for $65, and you'll get our T-shirt and our lovely DVD. So I'll leave it in your hands. Do check it out. Just go to the website. There's big banners there with subscribe now options, so it's very easy to do, and it'll take you about 2 minutes to go through the subscription process, and you will get an email that gives you a unique login for the website, your own account, that you can go there and you can access our podcasts ad-free, which is another benefit of being a subscriber. So you don't have to listen to those wonderful ads from our friends in Austin, Texas. But you know, sometimes people do get a bit tired of the ads. So I strip them out. It's a labor of love. I do that every week. I provide two versions of the show, one for radio broadcast, one for my subscribers. So it's another extra bit of work that I do for my subscribers to provide you those ad-free versions. So anyway, that's enough promotion. Let's continue now with where I left off in the previous segment, talking about marijuana and talking about perhaps the dangers of regularizing drugs, which are sometimes forgotten when in the rush and the excitement of thinking, well, wouldn't it be great if this was legalized? You know, legalized is not the same as becoming free to use. Nothing is really free in our society. Everything is very strictly controlled and regulated. And, you know, look at the way they regulate alcohol. Look at the massive amounts of money that the government reaps from alcohol sales. I mean, why should they do that? Why should the government reap all this money from you having a beer? I mean, it's absurd, ladies and gentlemen. It is robbery. It is not something we should ever be content with. And yet it hardly ever gets a mention, does it? The government robbery in the form of taxes on alcohol. And, of course, some dubious argument is put forth as for how it's necessary because, oh, the government has to deal with the health consequences of people who abuse alcohol and, you know, we have this universal healthcare system. What a load of rubbish. They don't help. They don't help. Helping people would be government programs, government-funded programs that teach people about natural health, which, again, is what we'll be talking about in the next hour. Teaching people how to eat well, how to live well, how to get the right amount of exercise, how much sunshine you need, all these different things that are absolutely essential for health. These could be on government programs, and our taxes could be going towards those types of programs. And you know, there could be courses led by people like Vera Scheibner. And I would gladly have my taxes go towards those sort of programs. But you know what? Our taxes, in the area of health, in the area of Medicare, just go towards funding big pharma. They go towards funding giant bloated oligarchies. I say maybe giant oligarchy is a bit of a contradiction in terms. But what I mean is giant companies, giant corporations owned by tiny oligarchies. So that's where your tax dollars are going. They're going to make the rich richer. Now, we're led to believe that, you know, a side benefit spin-off from that is to get all these wonderful drugs. I mean, that's the basic argument of capitalist system that we live under, is that, sure, you've got all these rich people, far richer than you'll ever be, you know, by factors like 1,000 or 100,000 to one. But guess what? You get all this wonderful, all these goods, you know, and you get jobs. You know, they create jobs, so everyone gets a job. Yeah. You know, some aspects of that I agree with. If it were real, if it were genuine, if there were a level playing field, if there were a real free market, which there isn't, because it's all rigged, because it's all controlled, and government and large corporations work together hand in glove in a revolving door situation. I mean, literally revolving door. You get a job in government, you go into big business. Out of big business, into government. The same people are just going in and out, in and out, in and out. It's the same tier of management of our society. It just has a different label on it. One's got the label of government, one's got the label of, you know, Coke, Pepsi, Bayer, Merck. Do you understand? They're just little brands, right? And one of those brands happens to be government. So let's talk about the legalization of marijuana. A staggering 85% of Australians believe marijuana should be legalized. This is from a dailymail.uk news story. 85% of more than 50,000 Australians said that they support the legalization of marijuana. And this survey was conducted by SBS's Insight team. Cannabis researcher Dr. Matthew Large from the University of New South Wales School of Psychiatry told Daily Mail Australia that despite research showing the ill effects of the drug, he supports the movement to legalize it. My view is that with respect to medical cannabis, there are no strong arguments against it, Dr. Large said. We have other drugs that are illegal that can be prescribed, including opiate drugs, the illegal version of which is heroin, and the legal version morphine. There are also stimulant drugs that we use in the treatment of ADHD and sleep disorders that are legal, so I can't see that there's a particular issue with cannabis. So as you can see, what they're basically doing is that they're bringing this into the framework of medicine, and we have a big campaign to legalize medicinal marijuana in Australia. I've got another article here from The Age, August 24, 2014. Opposition leader Daniel Andrews pledged to decriminalize cannabis for treatment of life-threatening illnesses comes as support for a legalization of medical marijuana campaign gains momentum in Australia. And it says here that a private member's bill is due to be introduced into Parliament. And I'm not sure if that's already gone through or not, being now November. I'm not absolutely sure. I'll have to double check on that. And of course, the Greens in Australia, the Greens Party, are heavily behind the move to legalise medicinal marijuana. But when we get back from the break, folks, I'm going to play to you a very interesting audio clip from 1962. It's from Aldous Huxley, a speech that he gave at the University of Berkeley in California. And I think it touches on some of the questions about drugs in society as a standard. Coming right back. welcome back. You're with Truth News Radio. Now, the subject I want to broach at this point probably requires more time than I have available for it in today's show. But I want to address something very, very important, which is often overlooked among those who are opposing tyranny and trying to advance the cause of human freedom. In the visions of dystopia that we've had in the past, there have been two slants on that, and there are two very leading literary figures who kind of represent two forms who've represented to us the ways in which tyranny can be brought forth in two quite distinct forms. And one of these is Aldous Huxley, who wrote Brave New World, and the other, of course, is George Orwell, who wrote 1984. And the audio that I'm about to play for you highlights the distinction between these two forms of tyranny. And I believe it's quite important when we start talking about legalization of drugs and how the government is stepping in to kind of endorse the use of drugs, because drugs are a very powerful way of controlling people's behavior. So having drugs in society, but having them under the control and regulation of a very powerful, tightly knit oligarchy is actually not something that you should necessarily think is a very good thing. So let me play to you now from this very, very, very interesting indeed lecture that Aldous Huxley gave at the University of Berkeley, California in 1962, I believe. Here we go.
Mr. Huxley has recently returned from a conference at the Institute for the Study of Democratic Institutions in Santa Barbara, where the discussion focused on the development of new techniques by which to control and direct human behavior. Traditionally, it has been possible to suppress individual freedom through the application of physical coercion, through the appeal of ideologies, through the manipulation of man's physical and social environment, and more recently through the techniques, the cruder techniques of psychological conditioning. The ultimate revolution about which Mr. Huxley will speak today concerns itself with the development of new behavioral controls which operate directly upon the psychophysiological organisms of man, that is, the capacity to replace external constraint by internal compulsions. As those of us who are familiar with Mr. Huxley's works well know, this is a subject with which he has been concerned for quite a period of time. Mr. Huxley will make a presentation of approximately half an hour, followed by some brief discussions and questions by the two panelists sitting to my left, Ms. Lillian Rivlin and Mr. John Post. And Mr. Huxley.
Thank you. First of all, I'd like to say that the conference at Santa Barbara was not directly concerned with the control of the mind. That was a conference, there have been two of them now, at the University of California Medical Center in San Francisco, one this year, which I didn't attend, and one 2 years ago, where there was a considerable discussion on this subject. At Santa Barbara, we were talking about technology in general and the effects it's likely to have on society and the problems related to technological transplanting of technology into underdeveloped countries. Well, now, in regard to this problem of the ultimate revolution, this has been very well summed up by the moderator. In the past, we can say that all revolutions have essentially aimed at changing the environment in order to change the individual. I mean, there's been the political revolution, the economic revolution. In the time of the Reformation, the religious revolution. All these aimed, as I say, not directly at the human being, but at his surroundings, so that by modifying the surroundings, you did achieve, at one remove, an effect upon the human being. Today, we are faced, I think, with the approach of what may be called the ultimate revolution, the final revolution, where a man can act directly on the mind-body of his fellows. Well, needless to say, some kind of direct action on human mind-bodies has been going on since the beginning of time. But this has generally been of a violent nature. The techniques of terrorism have been known from time immemorial, and people have employed them with more or less ingenuity, sometimes with the utmost crudity, sometimes with a good deal of skill acquired by a process of trial and error, finding out what the best ways of using torture, imprisonment, constraints of various kinds. But as I think it was Metternich said many years ago, you can do everything with bayonets except sit on them. That if you are going to control any population for any length of time, you must have some measure of consent. It's exceedingly difficult to see how pure terrorism can function indefinitely. It can function for a fairly long time, but I think sooner or later you have to bring in an element of persuasion, an element of getting people to consent to what is happening to them. Well, it seems to me that the nature of the ultimate revolution with which we are now faced is precisely this, that we are in process of developing a whole series of techniques which will enable the controlling oligarchy, who have always existed and presumably always will exist, to get people actually to love their servitude. This is, seems to me, the ultimate in malevolent revolution, shall we say. And this is a problem which has interested me for many years, and about which I wrote 30 years ago a fable, The Brave New World, which is essentially the account of a society making use of all the devices at that time available, and some of the devices which I imagined to be possible, making use of them in order to, first of all, to standardize the population, to iron out inconvenient human differences, to create, so to say, mass-produced models of human beings arranged in some kind of a scientific caste system. And since then I have continued to be extremely interested in this problem, and I have noticed with increasing dismay that a number of the predictions which were purely fantastic when I made them 30 years ago have come true or seem in process of coming true, that a number of techniques about which I talked seem to be here already, and that there seems to be a general movement in the direction of this kind of ultimate revolution, this method of control by which people can be made to enjoy a state of affairs which, by any decent standard, they ought not to enjoy.
I just want to pause it there, just to note, this was 50 years ago, ladies and gentlemen, 50 years ago. And already, as he said, technology and social control systems had advanced to a point where techniques of making people feel comfortable in their servitude, and particularly through the use of drugs, had become quite developed. So understand this. When I hear about legalization of marijuana and the possibility that, you know, we all might be able to just go and buy our marijuana and put ourselves into a state of somnolence legally, I don't actually feel that that is a good thing. I really don't. I feel that there is actually a malevolence behind that, which it's actually quite chilling. Because I do think the powers that be recognize that it is easy to control people when people voluntarily drug themselves. I'll continue with the speech by Aldous Huxley when we return from this ad break.
in terms of creating wars is a mind manipulation technique called problem reaction solution. And it works like this. First of all, you create the problem, but you get someone else to be blamed for it. You then report that problem through the media in the way you want it reported. You get the public to react to your problem by saying something must be done, this can't go on, what are they going to do about it? And at that point...
Hi, welcome back. And today I'm presenting you a clip from a speech by Aldous Huxley. We're only going to be able to play a small part of it, but it highlights the method of control, which is quite different to what you just heard in the intro bumper to our show there. That was David Icke talking about problem, reaction, solution, which is basically using fear to provoke a reaction that will then allow the government to step in and actually control things, and people will actually demand it. But aside from using fear, you can actually drug people into acceptance of almost anything. And you can use drugs in all kinds of ways too. It's not simply through tranquilization. Drugs can induce certain states of mind. So with that, on that note, let me just return now to the speech here by Aldous Huxley, which will take us through to the end of the first hour of today's show.
This, I mean, the enjoyment of servitude. Well, this process, as I say, has gone on for over the years, and I become more and more interested in what is happening. And here I would like briefly to compare the parable of Brave New World with another parable which was put forth more recently in George Orwell's book 1984. Orwell wrote his book between 45 and 48, at the time when the Stalinist terror regime was still in full swing, and just after the collapse of the Hitlerian terror regime. And his book, which I admire greatly, it's a book of very great talent and extraordinary ingenuity, shows, is so to say, a projection into the future of the immediate past, of what for him was the immediate past, and the immediate present. It was a projection into the future of a society where control was exercised wholly by terrorism and the violent attacks upon the mind-body of individuals. Whereas my own book, which was written in 1932, when there was only a mild dictatorship in the form of Mussolini in existence, was not overshadowed by the idea of terrorism, and I was therefore free, in a way which Orwell was not free, to think about these other methods of control, these non-violent methods. And I'm inclined to think that the scientific dictatorships of the future, and I think there are going to be scientific dictatorships in many parts of the world, will be probably a good deal nearer to the Brave New World pattern than to the 1984 pattern. They will be a good deal nearer, not because of any humanitarian qualms in the scientific dictators, but simply because the Brave New World pattern is probably a good deal more efficient than the other. That if you can get people to consent to the state of affairs in which they are living, the state of servitude, the state of being, having their differences ironed out and being made amenable to mass production methods on the social level, if you can do this, then you have you are likely to have a much more stable and much more lasting society, a much more easily controllable society than you would if you were relying wholly on clubs and firing squads and concentration camps. So that my own feeling is that the 1984 picture was tinged, of course, by the immediate past and the present in which Orwell was living, but that the past and present of those years does not represent, I feel, the likely trend of what is going to happen. Needless to say, we shall never get rid of terrorism. This will always find its way to the surface. But I think that insofar as dictators become more and more scientific, more and more concerned with a technically perfectly running society, they will be more and more interested in the kind of techniques which I imagined and described from existing realities in Brave New World. So that it seems to me then that this ultimate revolution is really not very far away, that we already a number of the techniques for bringing about this kind of control are here, and it remains to be seen when and where and by whom they will first be applied in any large scale. And first, let me talk about a little bit about the improvement even in the techniques of terrorism. I think there have been improvements. Pavlov, after all, made some extremely profound observations, both on animals and on human beings. And he found, among other things, that conditioning techniques applied to animals or humans in a state either of psychological or physical stress sank in, so to say, very deeply into the mind-body of the creature and were extremely difficult to get rid of, that they seem to be embedded more deeply than other forms of conditioning. Well, then we come to the consideration of other techniques, of non-terroristic techniques for inducing consent and for inducing people to love their servitude. Here, I mean, I think we can, I don't think I can possibly go into all of them because I don't know all of them, but I mean, I can mention a few of the more obvious methods which can now be used and which are based upon recent scientific findings. First of all, there are the methods connected with straight suggestion and hypnosis. I think we know much more about this subject than was known in the past. People, of course, have always known about suggestion, and although they didn't know the word hypnosis, they certainly practiced it in various ways. But we have, I think, a much greater knowledge of the subject than in the past, and we can make use of our knowledge in ways which I think the past was probably never able to make use of it. For example, one of the things we now know for certain is that there is, of course, an enormous, I mean, this has been always known, a very great difference between individuals in regard to their suggestibility. But we now, I think, know pretty clearly the sort of statistical structure of a population in regard to its suggestibility. It's very interesting when you look at the findings in different fields. I mean, in the field of hypnosis, in the field of administering placebos, for example, in the field of general suggestion in states of drowsiness or of light sleep, you will find the same sorts of orders of magnitude continually cropping up. You will find, for example, that the experienced hypnotists will tell one that the percentage of people who can be hypnotized with the utmost facility, just like that, is about 20%. But then there are various other methods which one can think of, which have, thank heaven, as yet not been used, but which obviously could be used. There is, for example, the pharmacological method. This was one of the things I talked about in Brave New World. I invented a hypothetical drug called Soma, which, of course, could not exist as it stood there because it was simultaneously a stimulant, a narcotic, and a hallucinogen, which seems unlikely in one substance. But the point is that if you applied several different substances, you could get almost all these results even now. And the really interesting thing about the new chemical substances, the new mind-changing drugs, is this, that whereas if you look back into history, it's clear that man has always had a hankering after mind-changing chemicals. He has always desired to take holidays from himself. And this is the most extraordinary fact of all, is that every naturally occurring stimulant, narcotic, sedative, or hallucinogen was discovered before the dawn of history. I don't think there is one single one of these naturally occurring ones which modern science has discovered. Modern science, of course, has discovered better ways of extracting the active principles from these drugs, and, of course, has discovered numerous ways of synthesizing new substances of extreme power. But the actual discovery of these naturally occurring things was made by primitive man, goodness knows how many centuries ago. There is, for example, in the underneath the lake dwellings, the early Neolithic lake dwellings, which have been dug up in Switzerland, we find poppy heads, which looks as though people were already using this most ancient and powerful and most dangerous of narcotics, even in the days before the rise of agriculture, so that man was apparently a dope addict before he was a farmer, which is a very, very curious comment on human nature.
Okay, folks, I don't have time to play any more of that clip from Aldous Huxley. I will link to the YouTube in our show notes. We are now going to hour two of the hour of the show today, in which I will be introducing Dr. Vera Scheibner, who will be talking about vaccines and natural health. A really important interview coming up after the news break at the end of the hour here. So do stay with us on the other side. It's going to be a really, really interesting discussion, and we're going to be exploring many, many questions about health, many, many questions about vaccines, but also how you can enhance and protect your own health. Stay tuned.